As we stand on the threshold of the Yom Tov of Shavuos.
Excuse me, could you mind telling us who you are and what your...
You'd like me to introduce myself?
Yeah, because in other words, to know what's your connection to this.
Okay, I guess I'll introduce myself. My name is Michael Silberman. I work at the Beis Din of America. That's the RCA-affiliated Beis Din. Among some of the things I do there is I coordinate the administration of Gittin, other personal status issues, and I'm involved in administering a network of Batei Din, of rabbinic courts around the country that engage in gayrus and conversion under the auspices of the Rabbinical Council of America and the Beth Din of America. Is that sufficient? Okay, good. As we stand on the threshold of Shavuos, the Yontiv, which serves as the paradigm for accepting converts into our communities, I thought it would be an appropriate time to discuss some issues that relate to conversions in Judaism. The necessity of Kabbalas HaMitzvos, of the commitment to living an observant lifestyle, as a prerequisite to conversion, has been a hot topic in the media over the last number of years, both here and in Israel. A number of years ago, a controversial book was written in Hebrew. It was recently translated into English by two professors by the name of Segi and Zohar, who contended the basic premise of the book was that the requirement of Kabbalas HaMitzvos, the requirement of accepting the mitzvos and committing to living an observant lifestyle as part of the Geirus process was a modern innovation and did not exist in halachic literature until the Beis Yitzchak, until Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkis, who wrote a tshuva on the topic in 1876. So what I think will emerge today in our brief discussion is that, quite to the contrary, this is indeed a fundamental part of the process, perhaps the most fundamental part of the process, and is well documented going back to the Gemara. Just as an interesting historical note, their claim is that this innovation happened in 1876. I have here a copy of a letter written in 1865 by a certain Rabbi Bernard Elohi. Rabbi Elohi was a Hungarian Rav who was forced to flee to America after the revolutions of 1848. And took a position in Baltimore, eventually in New Orleans, and then in Cincinnati. He was a rabbi in New Orleans during the Civil War, and his son collected his writings and published the memoirs of his father, Rabbi Elohi. In a letter to the editor of the Occident, the American Jewish newspaper of the day, in 1865, I'll just read a few brief lines. There is perhaps no country in the world where the Hebrew communities are so frequently increased by the number of proselytes as in this country, and our transatlantic brethren must surely, when they learn from the different American Jewish periodicals these happy tidings, greatly rejoice and think that the time of the arrival of the Messiah is upon us. However, he goes on to explain that this is far from the truth, and unfortunately the people who are joining our religion are joining our religion not because of their love of Judaism, but because of their love of a specific Jew and the intent to marry, and that's destroying the fabric of some of our Jewish communities. This is 1865, writing from New Orleans. But in any event, let's examine some of the sources about the requirement of Kabbalas HaMitzvos, of accepting an observant lifestyle in the process of conversion. Just as another introductory note, within the contemporary halachic literature of the last 100 years, much of this discussion is in the context of conversion for the sake of marriage. Conversion for the sake of marriage is discussed in the Gemara. It's clear that lahalacha, bottom line, if someone did convert for the sake of marriage, the conversion is valid. And as a matter of practice, nowadays, most rabbinic courts around the world would consider converting someone even if their initial motivation was for the sake of marriage if, bottom line, they discern independent sincerity above and beyond that specific relationship that might have been the initial impetus. So just an introductory remark before we set out to explore this issue. The Talmud tells us in Krisos and Daf Tes, a statement in the name of Rebbe, Kachem kavo sechem, like you, like your fathers. Ma avo sechem lo nifnesu lebris ela b'mila utfila v'harzaz dam. Just as your fathers, as Bnei Yisrael in the desert at Har Sinai, entered into a covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Mila, with Tefillah, with immersing in a mikvah, and with Harzaz Dam, with the Korban. So too, for all generations, if a person wants to join the ranks of the Jews, he must, if he's a male, perform Bris Mila, he must, or she must, perform Tefillah, go into a mikvah, and bring a Korban. And the Rambam tells us in the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel of Isurei Bia, which you have in page one of your handouts. I'm just going to skim a little bit. The first four halachas here labeled as one. Number one, the Rambam writes that halacha beis, the requirement of Mila, halacha gimel, the requirement of tefillah, and in halacha dalid, the requirement of bringing a korban.
What's Mila?
Mila, bris Mila. Oh, bris circumcision, I'm sorry. And in halacha dalid, the requirement of bringing a korban. And the Gemara tells us that nowadays, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, where it is impossible to bring a korban, that does not prevent the completion of a gerus process. No, tevila, immersion in a mikvah.
Oh.
I apologize. Okay, so mila, circumcision, tevila, immersion in a mikvah, and finally, bringing a korban. So the latter one, bringing a korban, is not required nowadays. Any convert has to make a note that when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, he'll have to bring a korban, or she'll have to bring a korban. But mila and tefila are definitely required as part of the process. And there is a dispute among the early authorities, a dispute among the Rishonim, as to whether a bezdin, a rabbinic court, must be present to witness the tevila and the mila, the immersion and the circumcision. So we presume that as a matter of practice, the halacha requires that a bezdin, a rabbinic court, be present for both of those events. If, for whatever reason, they were not present, so it's possible, under certain circumstances, according to some authorities, that the act was valid anyway, even though, again, practically speaking, we would require a Beis Din for both. Now, the Gemara in Krisos that we just quoted does not mention a requirement of Kabbalas HaMitzvos, does not mention a requirement of commitment to living an observant lifestyle. However, if you look in the source booklet on page 2, there's another Gemara that does mention such a discussion. The Gemara is in Yevamos. This is source number 2. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Ger Shaba Lehiskayir Bizman Azeh. If a convert comes to convert nowadays, Omer Blo, we say to him, Ma Reisa Shabasa Lehiskayir, why is it that you're interested in converting? Iata Yodea, She Yisrael Bizman Azeh, Diluyim, Dechufim, Sechufim, Miturafin. Are you not aware of the horrible plight of the Jewish people in contemporary times, that they're pushed around by our enemies? The Yisurin Ban Alehem, they have to deal with great sorrow, great tribulations, great pain and suffering. Im Omer Yodei Ani Ve'eni Kedai Mekablin Osamiyad. If he says, I am well aware of the sufferings of the Jewish people, and I only wish that I could be so great as to be counted among them, we accept him. Umodiyin Oso Mitzas Mitzvas Kalos Umitzas Mitzvas Chamuros. And we inform him of a selection of commandments, a selection of some easy commandments, a selection of some difficult commandments, a selection of some commandments with minor punishments, a selection of some commandments with significant punishments for violating them. Rashi here comments, this is source number 3. Umodiyin osa mitzvahs mitzvahs, we inform him of some mitzvos. Dehashta ayidei tefila hu nichnas l'chlal geiros, because after all, by now immersing himself, he is going to become a member of the Jewish people. He's going to be converted. Hilkach b'shas tefilas mitzvah. Therefore, during the act of immersion, tzarech lekabel alav ol mitzvos, he must accept upon himself the yoke of the commandments. So Rashi explains that when the Gemara says modiyin, we inform him, it does not just mean that we inform him as a point of information, but we inform him so that he will be able to accept the yoke of commandments at the time of conversion. And Tosfos there, in source number 4 in the Gemara, goes a little bit further and suggests that the requirement of Kabbalah Samitzos, of accepting the commandments, in some level may be even more fundamental to the process than the ritual acts of circumcision and of immersion. The Gemara there, without going into details, has the possibility that at first glance would indicate that immersion without the presence of a rabbinic court would be valid. As I mentioned earlier, that's a dispute among the early authorities whether immersion can happen without a rabbinic court present. Within the line of the Gemara that seems to indicate that a rabbinic court need not be present, Tosfos draws a distinction between the act of immersion and the act of accepting the mitzvahs. Tosfos writes in the underlined line over there that Kabbalas ha-mitzvos, the acceptance of mitzvos, me'akeves im eina bayom u'b'shlosha, that a conversion without Kabbalas ha-mitzvos would be invalid. And Kabbalas ha-mitzvos is a prerequisite for conversion, and it must be performed in the daytime, and it must be performed in the presence of three, in the presence of a rabbinic court. So Tosfos here suggests that on some level, the requirement of Kabbalas ha-mitzvos may be even more significant than the requirement of ritual immersion. And what I just read to you, my eyes shifted. What I just read to you was a codification of that in Shulchan Aruch in Source 5. What Tosfos wrote in Source 4 is that the reference of the conversion process as a mishpat, as a judicial act that requires the participation of a bezdin, may only refer to the act of accepting mitzvos and not necessarily to the act of immersion, and that is codified in Shulchan Aruch in source number 5. Yeah.
But the Gemara uses the lashon of ketzat mitzvos, only a few mitzvos. If you really had to follow all of them, it would have said kol mitzvos.
Right. So the Gemara is talking about hoda'as mitzvos. We have to inform him. Why do we have to inform him? So that he'll be able to accept them. Now, what you're getting at will be explained a little bit by the following, which is that the Chendas Shlomo suggests a distinction in terminology between Hoda'as HaMitzvos, informing, and Kabbalas HaMitzvos, accepting. As you noted, the terminology of the Gemara in Yevamos is Hoda'as HaMitzvos, accepting mitzvos, whereas the language that Rashi used and the language of the Shulchan Aruch in source number 5 is Kabbalas HaMitzvos, acceptance of mitzvos. So the Chendas Shlomo suggests, and we'll see how this is borne out in other sources momentarily, that Hoda'as HaMitzvos refers to a general informing of how the Torah works, or what mitzvos we have. In general terms, that there's a concept of Schar V'Onesh, there's a concept of reward and punishment, there are 613 mitzvos, and examples of them are the following. But then, there is a second element called Kabbalas HaMitzvos, acceptance of the mitzvos, and Kabbalas HaMitzvos must be in front of a Beis Din. And Kabbalas HaMitzvos may be the most central component of the Geirus process. That distinction will explain a line in the Ritva one of the Rishonim on the Gemara. If you look in Source 6, the Ritva in his commentary on the Gemara in Yevamos writes, Svara de Rabusa, she'im lo hodi'uhu, eno me'akev. That it makes sense. There's a logic that if we do not inform the convert of mitzvos, that doesn't nullify, negate the conversion process. And he says that there's a Gemara in Shabbos that gives that impression as well. And the way the Ritva writes in Shabbos and Daf Samaches, there the Gemara is talking about the strange case of a Jew who converts while living in a idolatrous society. Sorry, a convert who converts living in an idolatrous society, and he's not fully aware of all the mitzvahs. So the Ritva there has a line that this person accepted it upon himself in the presence of a Beis Din that he's going to convert, but they did not inform him of the mitzvahs. So what may emerge from these two ritvas is that there's a distinction between the formal act of informing a convert and the convert's acceptance of the mitzvahs. You know, it could be if a Beis Din did not formally inform him of certain specific mitzvahs, then that doesn't invalidate the process, but we still would require the acceptance and the commitment of the convert to keeping the mitzvahs.
Would it be only those mitzvahs that he was informed
about? No, so the Kabbalah would be, to quote Rabbi Tendler, I think made the following remark, that when the president takes the oath of office, he swears to abide by the Constitution. He may not know everything that it says in the Constitution, but he says that he's committing to abiding by the Constitution. See, here too, a person converts. He may not know every mitzvah, he may not know every halacha, but he accepts in principle that he's going to do whatever he's told, whatever the Constitution says, whatever the Torah says, and he may still have what to learn, but in principle, the acceptance is of the whole corpus of Jewish law. Right. So there are obviously the big ones that will always start with making sure they know about Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras HaMishpacha. But in general terms, when a convert is trained to the point of conversion, what we're looking for is their ability to be fully integrated into the Jewish observant community and to act as an observant Jew. So obviously they're going to be learning things as they go, and they may not know everything the moment they convert, but they have to know enough that they're not going to be Mechal Shabbos, the first Shabbos that they convert, that they'll know how to keep a kosher home, that they'll know how to keep Taras HaMishpacha properly, and through the normal process, which usually takes somewhere between 1, more often 2 years, they generally learn all the basics of Tefillah, how to be fluent in or proficient enough in the Siddur, what all the Yamim Tovim are, and how to run a Jewish household. Yeah, we generally assume that the ability to read Hebrew is necessary. If someone has some kind of a learning disability, someone's dyslexic or can't read Hebrew properly, we wouldn't view that as an absolute impediment. But for normal people who are capable of learning the language, we would require that they take Hebrew courses and at least can make their way through the Siddur, even if they don't understand every word, but can read the words. Okay. The Rambam is to some a potential source of confusion when it comes to defining the role of Kabbalah HaMitzvos, because if you read some passages of the Rambam, you get the impression that it's not so important, whereas if you read others more carefully, you'll see indeed that it is central to the process. We started earlier with the Rambam in the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel, source number one, where if one only read those four halachas in isolation, one could get the impression that Kabbalah Samitzvos is not a part of the process. He mentioned Mila, he mentioned Tvila, he mentioned Korban. There's no mention of Kabbalah Samitzvos. However, if you look at the Rambam that is cut off from the source sheet in front of you, the Rambam a little bit earlier in Perek Yud Beis, Halacha Yud Zayin, writes the following. Kol ha'akum kulam kishe yisgayru v'yikablu aleyan kol ha'mitzvos shebetorah. Every non-Jew, when he converts and accepts all the mitzvos of the Torah, etc., hareyu ki Yisrael l'chol davar, he's considered like a full-fledged Jew. So the way the Rambam introduces the whole parsha of Geirus is when someone comes to convert and accepts all the mitzvos, then he is a full-fledged Jew. And if you look at source number 7 as well, Ger shelo bodku acharav o shelo hodiuhu hamitzvos ve'onshan, if a ger was not properly investigated before converting, or he was not informed of all the mitzvos, and then he proceeds and undergoes a conversion with mila and tvila, and then he is yatsa mechlal akum, he is no longer considered to be a non-Jew, v'choshishim lo ad she yisbar tzukuso, and we have to see whether things are going to work out in the end, whether he is indeed a sincere convert. So the way Rav Soloveitchik explained the juxtaposition of the halachas and the Rambam here, the Rav gave a famous drasha on this in 1975, which he expounded on the centrality of Kabbalah Samitzvos in the Geirus process. What the Rav explained was that for the Rambam, Kabbalah Samitzvos is not simply a component of the process. It's not a component the way circumcision and immersion is a component, but rather it's the starting point, it's the introduction to the whole process. The absent Kabbalah Samitzvos, absent commitment to living a lifestyle as an observant Jew, so the whole process is meaningless. So it's a necessary prerequisite to the whole process. That's why the Rambam mentions it in his introductory remark in the end of Perek Yud Beis, which is the beginning of the presentation on Geirus, because that's the starting point for any discussion. In the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel, when he talks about the specific components, going to the mikvah and mila and bringing a korban, so there the Rambam doesn't have to mention it again because it was already presented as the general introductory comment as the basis for the whole process. You know, absent Kabbalah Samitzvos, the way the Rav said it, if a person goes to the mikvah, is he going because it's hot outside? Is he going for a swim? It's meaningless if it's not preceded by an acceptance and a commitment to living as a Jew. And that's what the Rambam says later. One second. That's what the Rambam says later. Choshishin, if a person comes to convert and wasn't properly informed of the mitzvot, so then we have to see, was he really accepting of the mitzvot? And that's choshishin. That's what we have to investigate, Ashi Yisbar Tzidkuso, until we determine that there was indeed an acceptance of the mitzvot. Yeah.
Was this even a question in pre-modern times?
So in pre-modern times, it was not a question because, well, possibly for two reasons. Number one, the instances of conversion in pre-modern times were quite limited. In Christian Europe, in medieval pre-modern Europe, it was usually a capital offense to convert to Judaism, and some of the few celebrated cases of converts during that period were indeed burned at the stake by the church afterwards. So from the end of the Roman Empire, or from, let's say, the second or third century of the Common Era, which is when there were reports of somewhat widespread conversions to Judaism, the beginning of the Christian period, until post-emancipation, the modern era, until the really the middle of the 19th century, there was very little conversion going on anywhere. So when you look in the responsa literature, you know, going up to the 19th century, you'll find references to, first of all, you'll see very little discussion of conversion issues, and you'll see a comment every now and then that this doesn't really come up ever because no one's converting. So in some sense, these were academic questions for a very large part of Jewish history. There were notable gerim every now and then, but there's no sizable sample, if you will. And second, when everyone was living in an organized Jewish community where there was only one Jewish community and the Jewish community was the religious community, and if you weren't part of that, you weren't part of a Jewish community at all, so it was kind of a non-starter, then no one would ever think that's what Judaism meant. No one would think of having any interest in being labeled a Jew with all the negative connotations of that and not having to be part of that community.
Right.
So I think the way to read that Rambam is Kishe Yisgayru, when they go through the formal acts of conversion, namely Mila Tvila Harsas Korban, and are Mekabel Mitzvos as part of that process.
Mm-hmm. And then that's part of the process of Geirus.
Right. Or, I mean, however you want to define and Mekabel Mitzvos, but in that context. No, what I meant by that is if a person's initial motivation is for the sake of marriage, but they're committed to living a fully observant lifestyle.
If the person getting married is marrying a Jew who's not fully committed.
So then the Bate Din that we work with would not convert a person under those circumstances. If a person is going to, the non-Jewish partner is very committed to living an observant lifestyle, and the Jewish partner isn't, so it's obvious that if they're going to continue together, something is going to give. This potential convert doesn't have the support of the partner, then that's not a very healthy situation. So the expectation is that whenever we deal with people who are coming with an initial ulterior motivation, number one, we want to ascertain that even though there might have been that initial motivation, that they are independently sincere to the point that if the partner fell out of the picture, they would remain observant. And you have to make sure that both of them are on the same page.
What is the situation where someone sincerely accepts all the mitzvos and converts, and years pass, and then they decide they no longer want to observe the mitzvos, and it's a woman, and she has children?
So that's called chazir l'sura. That's called going back to your old ways. And in halacha, that doesn't compromise the validity of the conversion. If a person converts and they're sincere and they accept the mitzvahs and they live an observant lifestyle, and later on they slack off, so that doesn't in any way compromise the validity of the initial conversion. No more than if a Jew stops being observant, that doesn't compromise his status. If a person converted and gave everyone the impression that he was fully committed to living this lifestyle, and then he was tricking the Beis Din for a year and a half, he leaves the mikveh and he goes straight to McDonald's, his Mechal Shabbos for Shabbos, so then clearly that's nothing.
Right.
But if they were living a committed lifestyle and later on something happens and they fall off, that doesn't compromise the validity of the conversion.
The children born after that conversion are still...
The children are still Jewish. Yeah. Right. Right. That happens. It's not uncommon. Okay, so if you look on the last page of the source sheet, we'll skip a little bit. There's a brief tshuva here from Ramosha, written in 1929. Ramosha is still in Europe, in Luban. So Ramosha writes over here, "B'mashen estapek in Ger Shelo Kibel Alav Mitzvah Senechshav Ger, the person who posed the question, asked whether a convert who does not accept upon himself the mitzvahs could be considered a proper convert. Pashut Ubarer She'eino Ger Klal Af B'Dieved. It's simple, no question whatsoever, that such a person is not considered to be a ger, even after the fact. V'chein Hora Abba Mari Hagon Zichron Levracha Lach LaMaisa, and he quotes his father, Ramosha's father, as ruling this way as well. B'uvda Kazu, a similar case, She'eino Ger Klal, it's nothing, Bein L'Kula Bein L'Chumer, we don't have to be concerned that this person is Jewish at all. She'kabalos Mitzvahs Beger Ma'akev, the acceptance of mitzvahs on the part of a ger is ma'akev, it is a necessary prerequisite, and the geris is invalid without it. V'afim amar b'fiv she'mekabel mitzvahs, even if he makes a pro forma declaration that he's accepting the mitzvahs. Im anan sadi she'ena mekabel lav be'emes ena klon. We know, we can read right through what he's saying, we can see through it, that he's not telling the truth. He comes and says, I'm going to keep Shabbos, and I'm going to keep kosher, and I'm going to do everything properly, but we know that he's lying. Then, eino klum, that's nothing. So that's where Moshe quotes here, 1929, from his father. In later Shuvahs, Moshe discusses some permutations of this. He discusses a person who comes to convert, and she's not willing to commit to dressing in a tzniyistic fashion. She's not willing to commit to dressing in the way that a nice, firm Jewish woman should dress. And the Ramosha entertains that maybe if her perception is that tzniyus is simply a chumrah, it's because in the community where she lives, most people don't dress this way, so maybe that doesn't necessarily compromise the validity of the conversion. There's a famous tshuva of the Achiezer of Chaim Ozer in the 1920s, I think, which is very important in this in this work. He's discussing the Gemara in Bukhara says in Daf Lamed Aleph that if a person comes to convert and they're willing to commit to keep the entire Torah chutz midavarecha, they're willing to commit to keeping 612 mitzvos. But they're not willing to commit to any one odd mitzvah. They'll keep the entire Torah, they'll keep Shabbos, and they'll keep Kashrus, and they'll keep Taras HaMishpacha, but he insists that he's going to lend with interest, or he insists that he wants to shave with a razor. But there's one mitzvah that he's not going to accept. So the Gemara says that that's invalid, that's not a good conversion. So Chaim Ozer discusses the possibility that if a person fundamentally accepts the entire Torah and accepts the binding nature of the Torah. However, he admits up front that he has certain taivas, he has certain lusts and certain desires, and he finds it difficult that he might not be able to keep a certain mitzvah. So Reb Chaim Ozer suggests that if a person fundamentally accepts the binding nature of all mitzvahs, and he just admits that he might not be so careful about this or that, then the geiris may still be a good geiris. He says this is not true when it comes to some of the fundamentals. If a person says, I'm going to be a good Jew, I just can't really keep Shabbos. So Shabbos is so fundamental to our observance that that's off the table. Kashrus is so fundamental to our observance. Taras HaMishpach is so fundamental to our observance. But if a person says that I fundamentally keep everything, but here and there, there might be certain things that I just can't withstand the temptation, then that would not invalidate the conversion. And others even disagreed on this point. The Dvar Avram, the Kavna Rav has a tshuva against this. But at least in principle, Reb Chaim Ozer's kula here is something that we sometimes work with. In certain cases, it may come into play. There's a very strange shuva of the Heshev Moshe, who's Rav in Eretz Yisrael after the establishment of the state. So he was asked a question about someone who came, the son of a Holocaust survivor, who was living in Israel. But it turned out that, and he had a Jewish identity, but it turned out that his mother wasn't Jewish. His father met the mother after the war, and the mother wasn't Jewish, and she didn't convert, and the father was somewhat traditional, so he had a little bit of a traditional upbringing. But push comes to shove, he was not Jewish. And he was interested in becoming Jewish. He was a traditional person. But it came out in the process of the conversion, as they were preparing him studying, that this person was a professional soccer player. And in Israel, the professional soccer teams play on Shabbos. And he wasn't willing to give up his parnassa. So he would keep all the other mitzvahs, he'd keep kosher, and he'd keep Shabbos except for his involvement in playing soccer. So first he begins by analyzing soccer, playing soccer itself. Definitely not a deraisa, may not be a derabanan, but then he says, but you have to get to the stadium, so maybe he'll sleep near the stadium, but that's okay during home games, but if they go away, then they have to travel, so maybe he could find a hotel near the stadium when they play the away game. But he realizes that this isn't going to work. If this guy is a professional soccer player and he's not willing to give that up, the Shmir Shabbos isn't going to be so great. And then he addresses the issue of the other issue one could raise here that he doesn't address directly. Shlomo Zalman addresses in a different context is Lifnei Iver. You're going to convert someone and you know that they're going to violate some mitzvah. So there's a prohibition of Lifnei Iver of giving someone bad advice or putting them in a situation in which they're going to sin. So you, the rabbinic court, are going to convert someone and then they're going to be Mechal Shabbos. So that's your problem. It's not only his problem. So how could you go and put him in a situation in which you know he's going to violate Averus? Shlomo Zalman makes that point in the context of Kabbalah Samitzis in general. So this Vehesha Moshe comes up with a very novel argument. He said he really wouldn't want to be Mekel at all, but he writes that this guy was engaged, I forgot to mention, this guy was engaged to marry a Jewish girl. And the girl he thought was suicidal, and if this guy wouldn't be able to convert, then he was worried that the girl would commit suicide, so he's trying to look for a kula. So he comes up with this very novel suggestion that maybe if a person is fundamentally mekabel mitzvah, so he fundamentally accepts the binding nature of the entire Torah, and he's aware that if a person violates Shabbos, he's going to be punished. So this soccer player comes and says, I know that, that Shabbos is a pretty fundamental part of our faith, and I know that if a Jew violates Shabbos, then he's liable to be punished. And even so, I still want to be Jewish, and I'll accept the punishment. So this tshuva suggests that maybe that would work if he accepts the binding nature of the Torah, and he just says, "I'm going to violate it, and come what may, I'm willing to take the chiyuv misa." Then maybe that doesn't compromise the validity of the conversion. That's his novel suggestion. Chiyuv misa, I'm sorry, capital punishment. That he may be liable for a capital punishment, but okay, so I'll take it. So that's. I'm sorry? So the problem with tshuva literature, with responsive literature, is that you get the question and you get the answer, but there's no historical follow up. So I don't know. I don't know if he converted even. It's a very dangerous, slippery slope. This tshuva was not accepted by anyone else, I don't think. I was just bringing it in for the human interest value of it. But in terms of normative halacha, that's not really reflective of normative halacha. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've always felt that way. And the rabbi of Israel, who converted him, refused to accept that idea. They said, even
was sincere when he converted, and that conversion stands. And she became an aguna. I don't know how, I know she's no longer an aguna, whether it's because they decided he really wasn't Jewish to begin with, or because he gave in. I don't know. But this is a true story.
Right, so that raises a different issue, which is his believability.
Yeah.
If a person undergoes a conversion with a proper rabbinic court, so if he comes later and says, I didn't really mean it, he's not necessarily believed. We don't believe him to compromise his status.
That's what they do.
Right, so that's why. If a person comes and says, we have evidence that the person converted properly, and there's a proper document that he converted, and he comes 10 years later and says, I didn't really mean it. So we don't believe him. We don't believe him to say that, right.
I think they found a rabbi who gave her a case.
Are all the Batei Din accepted at a certain level? Are all Orthodox Batei Din that
you
converted is accepted for everyone else, or some of them go a little under the radar?
Orthodox is a loaded term. Some Batei Din claim to be Orthodox or have people who identify as Orthodox that don't necessarily follow what we would consider to be normative procedures. So there are a good number of reputable Batei Din around the country whose conversions are generally accepted across the board. And then you have some ad hoc operations that aren't really Batei Din, but some rabbis get together, and those aren't necessarily as well regulated or necessarily accepted. So you have to.
What happens to those people who may not really be fully accepting of all mitzvot, and then their children are questionably Jewish if it's the woman, and then they have to go through a
gerut? You have problems. You have problems. That's why. The Rabbinical Council of America has taken steps the last few years to try to centralize the performance of gerus in America in a more orderly fashion to avoid these problems, so that there's more knowledge out there about what the reputable Batei Din are, so people know what they're dealing with and won't have to deal with these issues down the road.
But anything, let's say you're saying there's a gray area of those few people, but anything below Orthodox,
so we generally do not accept non-halachic conversions. We don't necessarily say that they're totally invalid, meaning if it came to a matter of a get, if a Jewish person is married to a conservative convert, we would always require a get, because when it comes to matters of marriage, we try to satisfy every possible opinion. So even a reform conversion, which we wouldn't accept, we never call up the guy for an aliyah, and we wouldn't marry someone on that basis. But if someone is married to a Reform convert, if possible, we would do a get, because when it comes to matters of marriage, we try to cover all the bases.
I was told
Now, that's the general practice of all Batei Din, both here and in Eretz Yisrael. If someone has a non-halachic conversion, if push comes to shove, if it's impossible to obtain a get, then under most circumstances, with a little bit of investigation, we could obviate that need. That's the topic of my next presentation. But definitely as a matter of l'chachil, as a matter of the first attempt, we would always require a get for non-halachic converts.
What would be the consequence?
Did not get a get? So push comes to shove, if someone was married to a non-halachic convert and they did not get a get, we would probably give them a heter to remarry anyway. But if it is possible to obtain a get just to cover the bases, we always push in that direction.
There was a push, I heard, I don't think it was done, but with all the non-Jews in Israel today, that they're talking about doing mass conversions.
Yeah, so unfortunately there are people in Eretz Yisrael who are of the belief that the national interest of preserving the demographics of the Jewish state trumps halachic considerations. But that's a stream of thought there, but that creates problems.
What have I walked into?
You've walked into the end of the session, which I think, since we're running 5 minutes late, we'll probably stop now. If anyone has any other questions, I'll take them.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.